Hey folks, Jeff Salzman here. Welcome to the Integral Living Room Community Call. It's Thursday night, March 6th, here in Colorado, coming from Boulder, Colorado. Terry Patton is here with me. Say hi, Terry.
Hey, everybody. I'm excited to be here. It's fun to be in Boulder. I'm thinking about the living room. I'll be back here with those of us you'll be coming in person.
And Diane Hamilton in Salt Lake City. How are you doing tonight, Di?
Great. I'm actually down in southern Utah in the Red Rock Country. We're doing a meditation retreat down by Capitol Reef National Park. Hi, everybody. It's a miracle to be online. How wonderful to be in the desert and still get to say hi. Hi, everyone.
Thanks, Di. And it is just a miracle to be together. And I think that's a wonderful word to use and a wonderful thing to feel into as we really work to move the ball here in the integral world, and that we are getting together as conscious integralists, as conscious evolutionaries who are so interested in this and so lit up by this idea and this realization, actually, with a capital R, that we are being lived by the process of emergence and that we are being lived into our better selves. And that in the process of doing that, we are just called to get together with other people who are doing the same thing. And that's really the impetus behind the living room, is that Diane and Terry and I have been working together for 10 years in the integral world space, doing all kinds of seminars and trainings and so forth. And we just wanted a chance to get together with a community of people, both online, virtually, as we are doing tonight, and then also in our integral living room events that we have. We've had one in end of last year, and we're going to have another one in Memorial Day weekend, end of May, in Boulder, Colorado, at the Integral Center. And that these are opportunities for us to get together with other people who, you know, see the world the way we do, flying at the same altitude, are interested in the same things. In some ways, we all have some of the same gifts for pattern recognition and that sort of thing. And that to work in that space of togetherness, to really explore what is it to be evolving in the we, in the second person, which is, you know, such an important part of the, you know, cosmos to us integralists. It's an irreducible dimension of reality. And we feel it in our hearts. It is our hearts. And so how is it to be heart-to-heart with other integralists? And so that's what we do at the living room. And we have different themes for different events. And for the event that we're doing coming up here in May, the theme is identifying, getting in touch with, befriending your own genius, and then giving it generously to the world. And we wanted to talk a little bit about that theme because, you know, when we think about what it is to evolve, you know, I know that there's, you know, in my case, a next Jeff. And I want to know, you know, I want to work as an actual practice, as an actual process for getting in touch with that next Jeff and more consciously bringing him, her online. And one of the ways of doing that is, you know, I always think of, you know, the history of the evolution, particularly the evolution of consciousness and also we spaces, from like blue amber, from traditionalism to modernism to postmodernism, and how all three of those minds are so different that in traditionalism, we want to fit in. We want to be a good citizen. We want to be obedient. We want to get to heaven. We want to be rewarded. We want to, you know, be part of it in a communal way, be part of the tribe. And in orange, how we break out and we recognize our individuality and our creativity, and we realize that we're unique and that we want to express that and get in the world and leave home and think new thoughts and travel and all of that good stuff. And then in green, where we become sensitized to the feelings and, in many ways, the pain and the suffering of other people and of other of far-flung places and, you know, even other creatures and people who have been oppressed and left behind and all of that. And what an amazing achievement of humanity all of those are in their time. And so then what's next? And I actually don't know what's next. I think that, you know, one of the ways that I practice is, you know, to just look at the basic theory. We see that if indeed we move from a more agentic or a more self-development mode, from like red and orange, to more communal modes of blue and green, that at least entry-level integral is going to be focused again on a new expression of the self. And that's kind of exciting to me. I think as we get into the frothy edge of evolution, you know, these stages get a little less distinct because we literally have more of them online at the same time. But this idea of really breaking loose again, of finding whole new capacities of ourselves in ways that seem magical or even supernatural to us in previous stages, become online. And one of these for me is just the idea of recognizing in myself that there is some deep gift, capital G, of God, that there's something that I have that the world needs and is very precious, and my job is to give it. And furthermore, my job is to see it in other people. And this has turned into, for me in my life, to just be such a precious practice. And it's so funny that I feel like I'm really just learning it in at least the way that I am, in the depth that I am, as I'm about to turn 60. You know, it's like, why did somebody tell me this? Even old friends of mine who aren't necessarily in the integral world, I think of my friend Greg, who is not the most sophisticated. You know, he steps on people's toes. He's kind of a bull in the china shop. That's how he would describe himself. And yet he has this amazing gift for getting people to follow him, basically. He's just an amazing businessman. Even though he steps on everybody's toes, he has a good heart. And this very guilelessness has turned into just a rocket ship of energy in building this organization staffed by people who willingly choose this juicy, human, imperfect environment that he creates because it's just more interesting and fruitful than, you know, the more secure and bureaucratic route. And to just have, as a practice, looked at him and seen this and appreciated it just helps me to relate to him in so much more depth and appreciation, and to compete with him less, and to know that I'm actually, when I'm with him and when I'm watching him, I'm seeing something that's beautiful. And just another quick story. This is my friend Caroline, who I've known since college. Caroline has always had a wonderful aesthetic. And she always dresses beautifully, presents herself beautifully. She has a small little condo in Denver that is just delightful and surprising in her own wry way, you know, that of just everything's perfect. And she's a four, and she's very aesthetic. We took a trip to Vegas, and she came back and just this last week showed me a book of pictures. She made it on iBooks, you know, through the computer, Mac computer. And it's this book of our trip. And it is just so beautiful. I couldn't believe it wasn't just a professional book. I mean, it was full of these surprising, wonderful photos, just perfectly composed. The one photo where the one building was reflected off another and it was creating this sort of Gustav Klimt array of rectangles, and just, you know, there was people and sequential and panoramas. And then she told me she did it all on her iPhone. And I was just like, my jaw dropped. It was like, I knew you had this talent, but, you know, Caroline's never really, you know, found a way to deliver it in a very public way. She cleans houses for a living. That's what she's done her whole life. She's lived a very beautiful life doing that very beautifully, actually. She's really an exemplar. She's one of the most successful business people I know, is how I see her. But to appreciate her in this new way, having seen this book, and having seen that there's a level of artistry that she has that is at the highest level, just helps me to have a deeper relationship. And so I think that's one of the things that, you know, just becomes interesting as we develop, as we are actually able to increase the resolution on other people, as we increase the resolution in a Google map, so that we could literally see more of their texture.
So kind of what you're suggesting in a way, Jeff, is that as you develop, you become a more capable appreciator of the unique expression of others. And this whole matter of just looking at these, at Greg and at Carolyn, and expressing some of what you're appreciating is a way of helping cue into how that quality of appreciating the unique gift or genius of these friends is, that's an expression of your genius, and that quality of appreciating the genius of those other people is part of what you're intending to deepen even when you turn your sights on yourself. Is that implicit in what you're just saying?
Yes, yeah. And I think you just demonstrated what I was saying, and so here I am listening to that, just glowing and bubbling and effervescent all over, because you just saw something about me that I think I also see, and wow, thank you.
You know, it's interesting. It's important, I think, as, in this matter of appreciation, that it really be genuine. I think if we just appreciated in a way that was pro forma, or like I'm going to appreciate everything, and it's the actual seeing of the real genius, the fact that Carolyn really brought some quite amazing artistry to these things, even though she lives this apparently modest little life. You know, she has these qualities, and the seeing of that is a way of, it's a little like going from that, the kind of deadened perception of the world where it's black and white, to a full color, technicolor appreciation of even, you know, the natural world around us, in a sense of seeing the dimensionality of one another. And in a way, we have to wake up inside in certain respects to reconnect with our own, because that's not, you know, there is a pattern to living that tends to subtly deaden some of that in us, and so there's a practice of continually reawakening.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
No, I think that one of the big moves from a first to second tier, from a, you know, green to teal, is that there's still it's like when I'm orange, when I'm a healthy orange, and I'm accredited, and I've been to the university, and I still sort of know my role. You know, I want to be in a group of people who are equal to me. It's strangely egalitarian. Even green really is. I mean, really, green's really allergic to hierarchy. So there's a certain hierarchy in a way that comes back online, because I literally find myself submitting, in the best sense of the word, to my friends in ways that I never did. I don't know why. I mean, I didn't see it. I felt threatened by it. I felt competitive with it. All of those. But now I'm thinking, why? You know, they can bring so much to me. You know, they can make me so much better and happier. And this is, again, a practice that has been just fruitful and lovely and wonderful. And I'm glad I sort of, you know, finally got it through my thick head.
Well, it's also, I think, maybe something that you're sharing, Jeff, in a way that's really personal. In you know, like, and you speak it that way, which I appreciate. In the sense that your deepened appreciation of others is, you know, as I said at the beginning, you know, it is an aspect of your genius. You have been a catalyst in the integral community in a variety of ways, but among the most important has been your ability to be a conduit for the creative expression of others, and your appreciation and your, you know, like, it's like the genius, the creative genius of the producer or the director, you know, the person who isn't themselves in the limelight, but who is doing all kinds of things to create the success of others.
Right.
And that quality of creativity that involves a kind of helping set the gem so that it's able to express itself, you know, is if we're to become a coherent culture, we're going to have to discover a kind of flow in our way of empowering and being empowered by one another that goes beyond what's common already in our society. And so this appreciation of genius and this activation of genius are I think we're on to something in terms of a certain spark, a certain juice that it's not just the activation of our own as if we're all little monads laboring in our own little private salt mine to kind of come up with our best version. It's also it's a relational matter, and it's a relational practice, and activating our capacity to see it in one another is a way of helping that lubrication, you know, to begin to flow so that we are a source of awakening and empowerment more.
Right on, brother. So, Di, how about we hear from you? What are you thinking?
Sure. Yeah, well, I've been listening a lot, and so this idea that we're in an evolutionary process and that we can actually claim something about that without some, oh, we think we're better than others and we're somehow superior. I know the introglyphs are sometimes accused of that. That isn't what I hear. What I hear is that you are experiencing more freedom in yourself, more ability to appreciate others and to express that appreciation, and that we're looking at, you know, if we genuinely are, if consciousness is genuinely growing and changing, as we've all seen it do, you know, you kind of chided yourself for not becoming aware that you could really befriend and be deep allies with your friends earlier. But let's assume that something's right about how we're growing and how we're changing, and that maybe our togetherness takes on different qualities. I was reading a book today about, many of you probably remember this, there was an airplane crashed in the Andes back, I don't know when it was, but I think the movie Alive was made on it.
Yeah.
And they were just talking about what it took to kind of survive together and to go through that together. And, you know, some of the sort of deep, tried and true kinds of virtues that human beings need when they work together, you know, humility, you know, dedication, the capacity to inspire each other past, you know, really serious obstacles, to be able to rely and lean on one another. And in some ways, I think that we really, the living room is really about having that conversation, and yet you're saying something that's a little bit counterintuitive, because you're saying, you and Terry both are saying, our unique gifts are very important to that. And so we have this incredible emphasis on individuality in our culture, and we're encouraged to become all that we can be, and there's some sense that, you know, striving towards some unique place in the world. So the question becomes, you know, at an integral level of development, how does this uniqueness inform greater community? And that we can actually see that they're not... This is no longer, this isn't the opposite. We can actually see this in our own awareness, that the more I can develop my gifts and the more that you appreciate those and the more that I appreciate yours and support you in the difference, so that we can tolerate sameness and difference, that there's a deep authenticity, a deep sort of togetherness that includes our samenesses and our differences, that we can have shared goals that still support each other's individuality, but it's still something that has to be lived. We have to live this, and I think that that's part of what we've done, is we've lived this together, and we've really grown to appreciate certain kinds of freedoms that we experience in relationship to each other and to other people in the integral world that have a kind of, if we can say it, a kind of unique flavor to it. And this is what we're hoping to share, and this is what we're wanting to explore. So the question I would pose, that I'm going to pose to everyone who's listening, we're going to move into a little practice portion of our call, is that, you know, the spiritual traditions, and I happen to be here in Southern Utah with about 10 other people who will be sitting and will be doing meditation for the next 2 or 3 days and spending some time in nature together. And, you know, within the Buddhist tradition, of course, that the ego is seen as an obstacle to fuller identification with all that is. And so meditation is really about shifting perspective from this small, separate self that to some degree is limited and who suffers into really feeling identification with reality itself. And the spiritual traditions are always pointing us away from the ego. So the question that gets raised for me this evening when we're talking about our unique gifts and the uniqueness of our first-person perspective, what is the difference between the ego and why do the traditions consistently, you know, support us in moving beyond that? And even when you look at developmental psychology, you could sort of say that a healthy ego is one that can drop itself. A person who is big is a person that gets beyond their own small perspective. A person who is, you know, so there's, that even within developmental theory, we say, yeah, there's a place for an ego, but a healthy ego is one that's fluid, that's not fixated. So we want to kind of take a look at that for a minute. We're going to do this in a practice setting because we want to be able to have a sense of what the egoic state in relationship to our gifts is and what this more liberated quality is that Jeff and Terry are describing to us. We want to get a felt experience of that. So to do this, we're going to break you up into groups of three, and we're going to do a sentence completion, and we're going to explore both dimensions of our experience. And so when you go into your group of three, you're basically going to say hello and where you're from and establish who's in the virtual space together. And then I'm going to pose a question that we want you to answer. And the question is, as the egoic self, I relate to my gifts by. So Jeff and Terry and I are going to model this. We're going to go around twice. Then we're going to shift and we're going to look at our gifts from the liberated self and see if we can notice a difference. So as the egoic self, Jeff, what do you notice about Jeff's gifts?
Well, as the egoic self, I notice that those gifts are mine.
Nice. Okay, good. All right, we're going to do this also, everybody, just so you know. These are kind of one-breath answers so that you can go around a few times. So, Terry, how about you? As the egoic self, what do you notice about your gifts or Terry's gifts?
Well, I'm proud of them, and then to some degree I'm insecure. I might compare them to other people. I want them to be important and significant. I feel very identified with them, and if they're not good enough, I wouldn't be good enough.
Okay. All right, good.
I want to glorify myself.
You have a lot to say about them. Okay, good. Okay, so as the egoic self, the way that I feel about Diane's gifts is they don't seem sufficient. My experience right now is they're not enough. I need to do more. I've got to, somehow I feel that I always need to be a little better or different than I am, that my gifts aren't sufficient. Somehow I should have been given something more or different. So Jeff, how about you? Let's look at this one more round. Go ahead.
I really have to give them these gifts.
As the egoic self,
I feel very clenched around. You know, I feel an anxiety around giving them that I don't think I will feel as I get more identified with the larger self.
All right, let's look at that. So I feel clenched and I feel anxious around giving them. Terry, how about you? As the egoic self again,
you better damn well receive them too.
Oh, and he's going to be pissed if we don't, everybody. So
yeah.
I just got that message loud and clear. Okay, good. Terry, how about you? As the egoic self, what do you know?
I want my gifts to be important and significant and have impact, and I feel like my value and my worth are very bound up in them. Got a lot riding on them.
Mhm. Mhm. Got it. Okay. So as the egoic self, the way that I see Diane's gifts, for whatever reason, and I'm just going with what comes up, and this is what I want to encourage everyone, make the identification as the egoic self and then watch what comes into awareness. So watch what I would notice coming to awareness is some fear that other people are going to take them or they're going to appropriate them and make them theirs and they really belong to me. So there's definitely a sense that they're mine, they're not other people's, and somehow they're going to be stolen, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we have
And I think if we did more rounds, Di, I might want to talk about exactly what those gifts are and what I like or where I feel strong or insecure. All that would come into the field, yeah.
Okay. So Jeff and Terry, we're going to now just kind of clear your field a little bit. I'm swiping my hands over myself just to clear out. Now we're going to identify as the liberated self. So make sure when you do the exercise, everybody, that you create a little interval there, you clear your mind a little bit. So Jeff, I'd like you now to identify as the liberated self. And it's so interesting, you're liberated from this kind of egoic clinging.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you notice as a liberated self about Jeff's gifts?
Well, that they're not mine in the sense that I thought they were, but they're actually God's gifts. And I'll use the theistic terminology, but
yeah.
They are the capital G gift of, you know, God.
Huh, okay. All right, so there's automatically less identification as mine. Okay, Terry, how about you? What do you notice?
I feel contact with a trust that whatever gifts Terry has, they are what they are, and they don't need to be anything other than what they are. And therefore, I'm just curious and open to see them for what they are.
Beautiful. Right. Beautiful. All right. So as the liberated self, what I notice about Diane's gifts is they're energizing. Like as I tune into them from a point of liberation, as I manifest or activate these gifts, I'm given life force through them. They're a very deep source of energy. Okay, Jeff. Let's do one more round, and then we'll let people go ahead and explore.
I'm just sort of feeling into this in real time, but I feel like there's a sense of pleasurableness about giving them that want to be in touch with and notice when I'm not feeling that. And, you know, do I need to be giving that gift in that way at that time to that person?
Beautiful. The word pleasure and energy.
Yeah.
Okay. Terry, as the liberated self, how do you notice these gifts of Terry's?
You know, as the liberated self, I think I feel this real don't know mind and this sense of each new moment being a moment of emergence and improv. And, you know, life is performance art. And Terry might show up in some way that might surprise me. And yet I have a kind of humorous feeling about who he might be and a sense of trust that something cool might happen.
Gifts are
unknowable, kind of.
Okay. Gifts are unknowable. Unknowable. Yeah, beautiful. Okay, so last time, as a liberated self in relationships to Diane's gifts, I'm noticing what's coming up for me now is a deepening of those gifts. In other words, the way they show up changes based on where I'm at in my own life stage. So they may mellow or deepen or change based on my own evolutionary process. And I don't feel dependent on them the way I did from the egoic point of view. Like the egoic point of view, I needed other people to really notice them, where now there's just a deeper trust around offering what is here to be offered. Okay, great. Okay, guys, so we're going to ask you to do the same thing, and there have to be a couple of ground rules. So one is, this is a one-breath exploration. You want to always begin by saying, as the egocentric self in the first round and as the liberated self in the second. So you want to establish the identification, and then then notice what comes into awareness, simply share it, and then move on to the next person. And you're going to have, let's see, just to make sure we have sufficient time, I think the whole exercise is going to last for 12 minutes. And there are three of you in each group. So that gives you a little time to transition. We'll give you a minute to transition, and then we'll hit a bell at 5 minutes, and that means you're going to shift identification, and then there'll be a one-minute bell when it's time to wrap up before you come back in. So that one-minute bell will be right around 11 minutes, and then there'll be a little bit to wrap up and come back in. Okay, great. Welcome back, everyone. We had an opportunity just to listen in a little bit here and there to hear if you were able to connect to this perspective shift, and it sounded like the vast majority of you did. Also, let me just appreciate you. I know the technology is still we enjoy it, but it still has obstacles, and a lot of you dropped off and got dropped back into other groups, and I'm sure there was a little bit of an alien quality to some of what you experienced. So thank you for your patience. What did you learn from this particular exercise? You can press 1 on your handheld if there was anything that became apparent to you that you would like to share.
Carrie Dickey Clark.
Hi, folks. Hi. I noticed.
Hi, Carrie.
Good to be with you. It's good to be with you all again. I noticed that when I was doing mine from the egoic self, I was kind of anxious and tight. And then when we got into the liberated self, there was much more kind of flow and fun.
Isn't that amazing? Just amazing. I think we lost your mic there for a moment. Thank you for that.
Yeah, that was great. Well, let's go on to Judith Smith. Hi, Judith.
Oh, hi. I think what really comes out is how similar we all are, how the basic doubts and questions and insecurities are there in all of us. I mean, you know, we are all part of the race, the human race, and sometimes you think you're completely unique, or that you know your problems or your doubts and you think, well, someone else doesn't have those, and what this kind of thing does, it reinforces that we all suffer from the same kinds of things, and yet when you can step out of them and deal from love and deal from compassion and deal from a sense of wanting to make connection, how all that develops into a sharing that is sublime above all of the insecurity.
And we all share that too. We all have that true nature, that original, in Zen we call it original face. Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you very much. Karen, how about you? Karen Casper.
Okay, just really quick, I just want to say I got on the call about a half an hour late, but I was able to enter right into it, and I am so appreciative and thrilled to be able to participate in these, because it's been a while. And, disclosure, I used to be a member of Andrew Collins' group, and this is just thrilling for me. One thing that I'll just say, one thing to know, in going back and forth from the egoic to the what you call the liberating self, the egoic part, when I was speaking from that voice, it was so limiting and constricted, and kind of I really feel like I don't spend a lot of time there much. And the liberating self, it was so much freedom, so much freedom to really just let go and investigate and be curious. And a person a little while back said, this is a very, it just shows how similar we all are. And it's really great to be able to share that with you. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Can we open up Igor's mic for a moment? Anyone from your group, Igor, who might have something to share? Yeah, you find it.
There you go, Igor. Yeah. I found you.
Thank you, sir.
You're more conspicuous in person.
What I was going to say is, as the egoic self, I realized I just really felt a lot of tension around my gifts, what I was saying, was I listening to people, how what they were saying was making me uncomfortable or making me happy, and just really felt the push and pull back and forth. And as the liberated self, it seemed much less important what people were saying, but just this deep feeling of tenderness for everyone, for myself, for just being able to be in a room with people who are interested in this.
Wow, it's quite remarkable. So when we talk about, you know, the importance of the we practice and joining, you know, as community, to be able to just even have this experience with one another, we're like, oh, we can access one state of mind and notice what that's like, and access another state of mind, and that we're in a group of people who are having that mutual recognition. Not to say that everybody's not capable of it, but how many people are actually actively cultivating it might be a different matter. So one of the things we want to suggest is for you to experiment a little bit around an integrated voice. You know, what is the integration of that liberation with, you know, occasional moments or allowing the ego to kind of come and go without creating a lot of hostility towards it, but to see it clearly and to trust your friends to see it clearly. So we're going to go a little bit deeper because Terry is framing this integral soul work for us, and we want to go a little bit deeper into connecting with what the soul dimension of who we are might have to offer to our learning how to become generous with our genius. So Terry, take it away. Thank you, everybody, for engaging in that.
Well, you know, Di, we have 20 more minutes in this call, and we have an awful lot of people whose hands are up. So I'd like to hear from a few more of them before I go into that, just to keep this community energy going. So if you don't mind, I'm going to call on Peggy Babcock. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Terry. Hi. I hit the one because I was in Jeffrey's group, and I had a sense of what he was going to say, which someone else already said, and that was that there was such a similarity between what we all said. And in addition to that, what I have become aware of, I didn't say it at the time when we were talking to each other, but the shift from in moving from the ego to the liberated self, it felt like between the three of us there was a much deeper spaciousness that included the ego. So from the liberated self, we could actually see the value of the ego even as we recognized its limitation.
So this guidance that Di just offered about what would it be to integrate the two, you were finding like that was just sort of spontaneously happening just in the move to the liberated self.
There was a shift, there's no question, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, Peggy. Yeah,
sure.
Right on. Faith Rendell, welcome.
Well, hi. This is my first experience with something like this, and it's very interesting. I was pretty scared right at first. I thought, well, you know, everybody will have something to say, and they'll know so much more than I do. But as we go along, I can see that it's really not that. It's mostly being in touch with who I am, and then realizing that seeing other people for what they are. And I thought that I was quite comfortable at the end. And the gal that I was with, and I think there's only two of us in our group, was very sharp, and she knew all the things that you guys were talking about, and I didn't. So anyway, I want to congratulate her.
Great.
Yeah, glad you had a good experience.
Yeah,
it's not rocket science in a certain way. It's actually, can you see this, or, you know, is this part of something you can relate to and find in yourself and share? Pretty easy when you finally get it.
Yeah, and also,
right,
it's always an exploration more than an arrival point. You know, we're exploring together, and as Terry mentioned, you know, this mind of not knowing and the mind of being open, and in your case, faith, the mind of faith, you know, of just being faithful about what's happening and trusting. So I'm glad you're here.
Yeah. Eric Best, welcome.
Hi there. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Thank you. For me, it's really interesting, Diane. I think you, just before we continued on with this conversation, you made some comment about soul, and that certainly is a word which I respond to with regard to what I call my higher self, the liberated self, perhaps. And in our conversation I had with Preeti, if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, hopefully, we were talking about the transition from going from egoic self to liberated self in our conversation. And I shared with her part of my experience. I've had a 33-plus year meditation practice. And one of the things which came up for me, interestingly enough, she was talking about how, Diane, I believe you teach that being in meditation is, in a sense, part of the process, if I understand it correctly, as you frame it, of liberation. And I can wholly support that. And I said, for me, an interesting thing happened after 33 years, because in meditation, I found myself very centered, very calm, very peaceful. I found an impulse developing inside of me that it was time to stop the meditation practice per se and to get out of the world and to move forward with my passion around the conscious community building. So,
right. Beautiful.
Things shift.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Good. And were you able to do that, Eric?
About that, she said, oh, well, how did that work for you? And I said, that impulse, an intuitive impulse, and certainly not any directive or anything, came about. And I slowly, in a couple of months or so, reduced the meditation practice quite spontaneously and felt myself tremendously energized for getting out there and doing my work, talking, lecturing, doing workshops, etc., about conscious community building, which now, anyway, by the way, thanks to my exposure to Ken Wilber and your guys, I refer to as actually a desire for creating second-tier community.
Wonderful.
Fantastic.
Wonderful. Well, I'm very interested in what you're discovering, and maybe we'll have, are you planning to come to the Integral Living Room in May?
Yes, I've been very interested in that. I had went to your website and looked at some of the literature and stuff, and there are links, and one of them, for me personally, I'm in a very tight financial situation. I'm going to have some surgery that's going to cost several thousand bucks, and I was asking if it was possible to get some sort of stipend or something or another. That would certainly help if it's possible.
All right, great. All right, well, we'll definitely circle back to you on that and see what we can arrange, because we'd love to hear more about what you're learning in terms of your community building.
Yeah, if you want to come, we want you to come.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Eric.
You're welcome.
Really good to hear from you. Maybe one more. We at least have time for one. And
cool.
How about Shayla Wright? Shayla, am I saying your name right?
You are, Terry. You are. Thank
Hi.
You. I was a little startled. I'm also a long time meditator, and I was a little startled by the difference between the two realms. And I kept getting this feeling with me and my partner of the vastness of the gifts that want to come through this little tiny nozzle of the ego, and how much pressure that creates, and how much anxiety has to be there if I'm owning them in that way. No matter how much I want to give them, I'm also holding them back. I was really struck by all that.
Wow.
Yeah, that, I really relate to that too. And sometimes I wonder about, for me, I work with urgency, because there's a sort of a clenched egoic urgency that, again, feels anxious. It's like I was talking with Di about earlier in the call. And then an urgency that's more transcendent, that just, it's more of a realization that I have this thing to give, and I may give it, I may do it perfectly, imperfectly, I don't feel quite as anxious about it, and yet at the same time I don't want to get complacent, and so I get a little confused, and this is the territory I'm sort of trying to work out. But yeah, I relate to what you said.
Well, the thing that you said, in a way, Shayla, suggests to me an opening into what I'm focusing on these days, this integral soul work, because there are many different ways, of course, in which that word soul is used in many different contexts, and it's not like it only means one thing, but there is just kind of an ordinary kind of connotational meaning to the word soul that we all understand. Like if we say, we listen to Coltrane or Bonnie Raitt singing, and we can say, oh, that organization has no soul, or there's a soul mate, or qualities that are soulful and in just the most ordinary way. It has to do with depth. And there is a quality of liberating of our attention that has to do with expanding and ascending and awakening. And there's another quality of what happens as we deepen that goes down and that deepens into the embodied, organic particulars of the expression of us. And as we evolve, one of the ways in which I know I'm growing is that aspects of who I am becoming, who it is that is sort of potential, who it is that's around the next bend of the river that I'm not yet, but that I'm becoming, begin to come to me in an intuitive way. And sometimes that's very particular. It's not only about being more expanded or about being freer. It can be about something very particular, like the place you're going to live or the person that you're going to live with or the people you're going to work with or the particular themes that are going to be important or the arenas in which you're going to work or even the kind of home you're going to be in or the kind of car you're going to drive and the particulars of how your soul's expression are going to flow best into the world. And it's an insistence in a way, that being, that deeper dimension of the being I'm becoming, in a way demands of me that I listen from a deeper level of myself with the ear of the heart. And I think that this dimension of soul growth, it's an ear that isn't in the head as much as it is more in the heart region of the body. And in the first of these community calls, I suggested that we played a clip of Ken Wilber talking about listening and about how a big aspect of what we're all about in this cycle of the Integral Living Room with these themes that Jeff was outlining at the beginning of the call. It involves a practice, and in a way it's a practice of abiding in a faithful relationship with that which is not yet emergent, that which is not fully yet manifest. And that is something that gives us a sense of itself, just a tacit sense of its presence, you know, at first. And that's kind of the causal dimension. And a little bit of a sense of its quality of presence, even. Then maybe a little bit of information begins to come through and qualities that are more specific. If we can stay, in a way, faithfully living in an open, receptive way, tuning in with these deeper, slower, soulful rhythms to something that's revealing itself. So one of the things that I know I really care about in this cycle of the living room is a kind of soul level coming online. And I think part of that is something we can begin even now. Even if you're coming to the living room at the end of May, the seminar can begin right here, right now, to the degree that you invite your soul's message to register. If you just tune in, turn up your, I like to call it turning up my hearing aid, to really be patient and abide in this receptive listening mode and let this deeper signal come in. And this is very personal. And yet if a whole group of people is tuning in this deep way, and if we keep tuning in again and again during the weeks between now and May, the way we will have ripened by the time we come together will be present in the room in a way that will have those months of receptivity and deep listening right there and implicit and available to us. So there's an invitation, I think, that this soul work is not just something we do, even though there's a dimension of it we kind of have to do on our own, because it's our own soul's voice that we're listening to. There's a potential for the soul of the we, the soul of the collective, to begin to surface. And if, to the degree that many of us do this, many of us listen and stay in a faithful abiding with the listening to the unmanifest, you know, this quality of wide open listening that that's so beautifully expressed by a wonderful story about Mother Teresa was once asked by a reporter, when you pray, what is it that you say to God? And she says, I don't say anything. I just listen to God. And they say, oh, well, then what is God saying to you? She says, well, he's listening too. Well, there's a kind of listening that is really patient and deep and spacious, like meditation. And yet, something does come through. And there is a voice of a soul expression that, if each of us is faithful to it, we can bring that to our meeting with one another, and it becomes a different kind of meeting of the souls of who we are becoming. And in that spirit, I want to invite all of us to maybe take some time in our silent moments when we're walking or gardening or in nature or doing the dishes or simply in our moments of waiting in line at the store or whatever, to be tuning in, you know, grounding into the earth, into our connectedness with the embodied dimension, the soulful embodied dimension of what's evolving, wanting to come into form. And I wanted to make that invitation a big part of what we welcome in the end of this call. So, well, this is the end, I guess, getting close to the end of our call. This call in our series of calls was the one that we had intended to focus especially on our first person. And our next call, which is coming up toward the end of this same month, we delayed this one by a week, so our next one is in only 3 weeks. That'll be on the second person. And our date for that call is, I think, March 27th. And we're going to go into a whole different body of work as we look into this this process of co-evolving and relating to the emergent as a community. So, Di, Jeff, do you want to maybe reflect on any of this and say any more?
Well, I just say amen, Brother Terry. I think that was beautifully transmitted there, and I look forward to working with the soul dimensions of our evolution. Yeah, look forward to doing that at the living room in person, too. So thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks, everybody. It's been a fun call. It's a great group of people, and I'm happy to be here.
What stood out for me, Terry, and what you said is that when we hear the word soul, it puts us in touch with our depth. And so this question of, you know, how can we, there's a lot of depth on this call. There are a lot of people who've had really deep spiritual practice. And the question about, you know, how do we create community in our time and place with people who have similar questions, similar realization, and how do we go deeply with those same people? I think that is a really, really worthy inquiry. So I look forward to connecting with everybody again, and thank you very much for being here. Thank you, Terry and Jeff. It's always a pleasure.
Indeed. Thank you, Di. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, everybody. Jeff. Thank you, everybody. Okay. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you.
Lots of echoing.